Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It is Saturday, our look back at the week show, and what a week it has been, and it's just getting crazier and crazier. And if you're looking through the webcam, the sun is just starting to come up here on the island of Oahu. And I've got a big, tall Michael Rivero action figure coffee mug full of Kona coffee. And I'm waiting for the caffeine to kick in and crank me up awake here. The webcam is running. Chat room is open. All systems are go. And we're ready to rock and roll full tilt boogie for truth, justice, and what we used to call the American way. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. The phone lines are open, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room today, twiddling the dials and keeping us out of trouble. One hand hovering over the phone, the other hand hovering over the five-second delay. So call in and let us know what is on your mind. Okay. Our website, whatreallyhappened.com, is still suffering regular hacking attempts. We are holding them at bay. Other sites are not so lucky. Truth Seeker in Great Britain has apparently been down for over a week now. Nobody's really sure what's going on with them. Op-Ed News last night took a hit. They've had major damage to their site. They're restoring from a backup. And it's getting pretty intense out there. We're also getting email that in some parts of the world, the What Really Happened website is now being blocked by some of the larger, well-known ISPs. People are still able to get to the site using anonymous proxies and everything. But I think it's an indicator of the degree of panic out there right now, where those who have ruled us with lies and deceptions for so long, and they're beginning to finally understand it doesn't work anymore. And this is a desperate attempt to try and drag us forcibly back to the height of the Cold War, when the government got to control everything that you see or hear or read or think about, and they want to go back to that, and they can't. And they're hitting the panic button on this situation right now. So it is a war. It is a war in cyberspace, which I think is a good place to have a revolution, if you're going to have one, because there are no bullets and bombs and improvised explosive devices. There's just hackers and computers, and they're very annoying, but at least the little kids running around on the playgrounds are not catching rapidly moving metal objects with their bodies, which I think is a big drag on everybody. Now, getting into the economic news, and then we're going to get into some other stuff. Two more banks were closed last night. Indiana-based Irwin Union Bank was shut down. $2.7 billion in assets. I think this is the sixth largest bank failure this year. At the same time, Kentucky-based Irwin Union Bank also failed. And I got an email from somebody saying, well, there are thousands and thousands of banks. So what if 90 have failed? Well, some of those 90 have been really large. Okay, and the problem is that when these banks fail, and the FDIC has to cover the cost, if they can't find somebody who can buy these banks, they have to cover the cost. Now the FDIC is talking about having to borrow more money just to cover these bank failings, and they're talking about raising the insurance rates to the other banks to cover the FDIC, which is going to put some more of these borderline banks over into default. It's a cascading situation, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. As we were talking about yesterday, you know, we had Ben Bernanke came out earlier in the week saying, is the recession over? And saying, yeah, it's very likely the recession has ended, was his direct quote. And then we got hit with these record jobless numbers, and it's just in the space of just 48 hours, it's been made painfully clear to everybody that Ben Bernanke is full of it, that once again he is trying to give everybody a tobacco enema, along with Obama's storm is over and the green shoots and the glimmer of hope and all these other euphemisms they're trying to feed you, to dump on your head, to convince you it's going to get better. Just be patient with us a little bit longer. What's really going on is the economists and the government, politicians, they're looting the system, putting it in their own pocket, and they're kind of hoping that if they can just keep you pacified and in your proper place in society a little bit longer, the economy might magically heal itself, and then they can take credit for the recovery, and life will go on as it did before. I don't think so. I think the American people have come to understand it is the government, especially with its excessive taxation of ordinary working people and its policy of rewarding corporations to send jobs overseas, that has created the current crisis, plus the fundamental problem with the Federal Reserve, which is that it is a giant pyramid scheme. It must always find new borrowers to keep itself going. And on a finite planet Earth, because we don't have the starships docking here yet, to go out and spread the benefits of our economy to the rest of the planets in the galaxy. We're on a finite planet with a finite number of people. Sooner or later, every compound interest reserve-based system, this legalized counterfeiting operation, has to come crashing down. Welcome to the crash. This is what's going on here. So Bernanke, maybe he's actually being truthful. He's saying the recession is pretty much over because we're going into a full-blown depression. So maybe in that context, if we look at it from that point of view, Ben was actually telling us the truth. The recession is over, and now we're really in for it. And one reason that may be happening, of course, is the option mortgages. The option ARMs are now getting set. They're coming up on their reset period, where all these people who got these very low teaser rates, and they said, well, by the time the option mortgage is reset to a higher rate, I'll have a better paying job, and we'll be able to afford these new payments here. And the house will be worth a lot of money, so I can probably even refinance then. Well, neither of those happened. Median income has collapsed, and property values have collapsed. These people are sitting on mortgages that are more money is owed than the house is actually worth, and now the payments are going to go up. You're going to see a lot of people just mailing the keys into the bank and say, take it. I don't need this anymore. And they're going to walk on it, and we're going to see more mortgage companies collapsing or running to the government for bailouts using your tax dollars. The situation's not improving. And the reason it's not improving is very simple. We are not bringing back the high-paying jobs we used to have. I know out there the Republicans are screaming, we don't want socialism, we don't want welfare. Well, I got a newsflash. We don't want that either. We, the working people of the United States of America, do not want charity. What we want is only what we had before. We want the earning ability and the standard of living that we had before 8 years of corporate giveaways and pointless wars by the U.S. government. Going on 9 years now. That's what we want. We don't want a free anything. We don't want charity. We don't want pity. We just want what we had before, what we built for ourselves before the government got greedy and said, you know, those Americans, they don't need all that money. It's really much better if it's under the control of the government to spend all that national wealth. And, of course, the Wall Street boys, they need it there because they're suffering terrible hardships from all those bad choices they made with the credit default swaps. So Big Daddy government is going to redistribute the wealth. I think the big problem that we have here, we saw this a week ago in the D.C. protest where everybody's saying, you know, we don't want socialism. Well, they're a little behind the curve. I mean, I applaud the protesters. And I support them, and I think they should be out there. And the angrier you get, the more and more people in government get the message that we've hit our limit. Nancy Pelosi apparently had a little bit of a minor tearing episode, play for sympathy. So they're starting to get the message that they can't play the old games any longer. But all these people out there saying, screaming about Obama's socialism, they're way behind the curve. We have gone right past socialism. We're into fascism. What is the difference? Very simply, as we've explained before, socialism is where profit and loss together is socialized across the entire society. Fascism is where profits are kept private and only the losses are socialized across society. The Wall Street guys get to keep all the goodies, all their bonuses and all their executive perks. The business losses from the banks and insurance companies and everything are being socialized across the entire country. That's what the bailouts are about. That's what TARP is about. That's what some $14, $15 trillion worth of taxpayer money dropped onto Wall Street is all about. They're socializing the losses but keeping the profits private. That isn't socialism. That is fascism. So what we have here, and the reason this country is headed for collapse, we have the Republicans accusing the Democrats of being socialists. We have the Democrats accusing the Republicans of being fascists, and they are both correct. So that is the mess that we are in right now. So end of this month, beginning of next month, we're going to start seeing a new series of declines as these mortgages come in. We're going to see a lot of defaults on corporate real estate. End of this month, a lot of the quarterly reports are going to come in, and they are not going to look all that good. We know that the media is understating the true scale of the unemployment problem. They were saying California unemployment at 12%. We have other analysis that say it's actually at 40%. That's how bad it's getting out there. We're going to take a break for some commercials, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
We'll be right back.
America. Welcome back to the show here. Now, a week ago today, we saw this wonderful, wonderful event in Washington, D.C., where a whole lot of American people across all of the political, demographic, gender, bias, whatever, spectrum, converged on Washington, D.C., to basically express their dissatisfaction with the United States government. And by the way, it wasn't just Washington, D.C. They got all the press because they got the huge crowd, but there were similar demonstrations in other cities across the United States. And it apparently put the government into a total panic. Because there's this little slogan that we have floating around American history, E pluribus unum, out of the many comes one. And it looks great on the walls and on the currency and on the placards and everything, but it's not something the U.S. government has ever really wanted to have happen. Because as long as Americans can be split up and divided into black and white and rich and poor and young and old and men and women and straights and gays and red and yellow and green and peach and taupe and mauve, then we are easy to control. They can pit us against each other in order to keep us all their slaves. We saw this back during Vietnam when the black people of this country and the white people of this country shared a common concern, which was the draft, which was sending both black people and white people to die in Vietnam. And that was considered by the majority of Americans as a bad thing. So we had leaders like Martin Luther King who were starting to say, you know, this war is a bad thing for everybody. And black and white America was starting to unite. So the U.S. government embarked on a campaign to factionalize the country, to split the population along racial lines. And they used undercover informants who went out and did some very atrocious things, and a complicit media that went out there and said, oh, yes, this racism is coming back. We've got to watch out for those militant armed black people over there in the Black Panthers. Let me tell you a little something about the Black Panthers. When they came along, the name was originally more of a joke than anything else. You know, we're black, we're the Black Panthers. Their original agenda was very simple. They wanted local control of the school curriculum, which certainly in this day of mandated recording industry propaganda and Holocaust education and global warming education and 9/11 education going through the schools, in place of teaching these kids stuff that could, like, get them jobs, I understand where the local community wants to decide for themselves what their kids are going to learn. And the Black Panthers originally wanted breakfast for the ghetto children. Also another very good idea. And they were getting a lot of support. And the last thing the U.S. government needed right then was for the black and white communities to unite together and say, end the war right now. And the government, in particular the FBI, set out to deliberately create a racial divide in this country. One of the scummiest, slimiest tricks they pulled has come to be known as the Black Panther Coloring Book. And amazingly enough, when I was living in Southern California with my parents, this happened back in the 1960s, we actually got one of these in the mail. And I remember at the time saying, we're a white family. I mean, more or less. We're definitely not black. You know, we're multiracial. Why are we getting this in the mail? And that should have been the suspicion right there. But we still trusted the government and the media to be telling us the truth. Poor, innocent, naive that we were at the time. And the media was telling us this is being put out by the Black Panthers. And it was filled with all of these very racist images of black people killing white people. And the white police were always portrayed as pigs. And it showed black children literally blowing the heads off. And you know something? They weren't even good illustrations for coloring. You know, there's a specific style of artwork that is a coloring book. This was not. It was just a bunch of very crude sketches. And it was put out there, and we find out in the 1970 during the COINTELPRO hearings, when the whole covert domestic intelligence apparatus of suppressing free speech in opposition to the war was exposed, and Congress had to act or risk losing their legitimacy, not that they really got it back by that wide a margin. And come to find out, the FBI had been behind this Black Panther coloring book, and they had put it out there specifically to alienate the white population against the black population, to keep us fighting amongst ourselves so that we wouldn't unite together against the war. So, we have this history. This is how the government likes to play. So, a week ago, big protest in Washington, D.C. They're still arguing over how many people showed up, with the organizers saying 2 million, and the foreign media saying 1.2 million, and the American media saying 17, maybe 18 people showed up. And looking at the photos of the protesters, we're seeing all different kinds of agendas being agitated for. There's a common theme. Taxes are too high. Stop spending taxes on war. If you're going to take the tax money from us, spend it on us. Don't take half of everything that we own and give it to Israel and Wall Street and the bomb makers. If you're going to take half of our money, give it back to us as education and health benefits. That was a common theme throughout the whole thing. But it must have scared the Obama administration to see a united American people demonstrating in the streets of Washington, D.C. Because almost immediately after that, we started seeing this media campaign to revive a racial divide in this country. We had Rush Limbaugh saying we need to go back to segregated buses because of this black-on-white violence that took place on this one bus situation. Who knows? These black kids may be FBI informants. Remember, there are FBI informants on every college campus in America. That is a given going back at least to Vietnam days. The FBI keeps informants on every college campus. That smelly kid with the dynamite who's trying to talk you into blowing something up, that's your FBI informant. So stay away from him. He's a doofus anyway. You don't want to catch diseases from him. So anyway, we're seeing this thing where Maxine Waters is coming out and saying, yes, opposition to Obama is rooted in racism. You're seeing they're calling the teabaggers are now bigots. And this is a scammy trick. What they're doing is they're recycling Israel's favorite trick of deflecting criticism by screaming anti-Semitism, racism. You just hate the Jewish people. That's the only reason you're complaining about us dropping white phosphorus all over the Palestinians. If it was anybody but Jewish people dropping white phosphorus on the Gazan children, you wouldn't care, which is nonsense, of course. I take exception to dropping white phosphorus on any children anywhere by anybody. I think most sane, civilized, moral, decent human beings would probably agree with that. But they're trying to fan up this racism issue for two reasons. One, they want to try and convince opponents of the government to shut up or be confused with racists. You know, if you oppose high taxation, you're only saying that because you're racist. If you oppose the wars, you're only saying that because you're racist. And that's nonsense, because we were opposed to exactly the same stuff when that lily-white good old boy from Texas was in the White House last year. Okay? So this is nonsense. But what they're also trying to do is they're trying to reignite racial tension. Instead of the white and black and red and green and puce people of the United States uniting to confront a government gone hideously wrong, they're trying to deliberately get us to go back to fighting each other. So the blacks will be over on this side, sneering at the white people on this side, who are sneering right back at the blacks. And as long as we're doing that, the government is going to be laughing at us because they've got us under control. We've gone back to being their willing slaves when we fight each other. Don't fall for it. You're way too smart for that. If you weren't that smart, you wouldn't be listening to this show. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about this attempt by the U.S. government to bring back racially based divisions in our society. The goal is very, very simple. If the government can trick us into fighting amongst ourselves, then we're not united against the government. And so they're trying to turn the whites against the blacks in order to keep us all, white and black, their slaves. To keep on giving them half of everything we ever produce with our lives so that they can give it to their cronies and their buddies and Israel and Wall Street and the bomb makers and everything like that. We have, in fact, an article came out yesterday saying call for black power unity. I mean, they're literally trying to say it's a good thing if the blacks all mobilize as a separate subgroup from the white people. Folks, it could not be any more obvious this is what they're doing. They're trying to break America up into these little balkanized racial groups and get us fighting against each other so we're not united against the government. Please don't fall for it. You're really too smart for this kind of stuff. Now, speaking of too smart for the things, we're still seeing this push for a new war in Iran, and they're having a hard time getting traction on this one. It's understandable. We've got the United Nations and the International Atomic Energy Agency confirming again with the new head of the IAEA saying that Iran is not building nuclear weapons. They have no nuclear weapons. They're building a nuclear power station, which is their right under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. We have every United States intelligence agency unanimously reaffirming the national intelligence estimate given to Bush last year. Iran does not have nuclear weapons. They are not building nuclear weapons. They are not making the preparations to build nuclear weapons. Yesterday, in an apparent attempt to counterspin and counterpropagandize all of this information coming out, AP went to press with a story based on a leaked confidential report from the usual anonymous source that Iran is able to build a nuclear bomb right now. It was all over the corporate media. I'm still seeing it on the crawl on MSNBC this morning. This morning, the International Atomic Energy Agency has come out and said wherever this confidential report comes from, it is not from the IAEA or any of their documents, that there is no secret report by the IAEA saying that Iran has nukes that contradicts the IAEA's public commentary on the subject. It's another hoax. It's another fake. It's like the laptop full of Iranian nuclear secrets that George Bush was using to try and sell this lemon to the American people. It's a hoax. The laptop came from the MEK. The MEK is now saying they got it from Mossad. Oh, gee whiz. I wonder who wants to trick the United States into making war on their enemies yet again. Now, we already know that when Ahmadinejad shows up for his meetings at the end of the month, that it's a foregone conclusion nothing will be accomplished. One of the government's spokeslugs on MSNBC yesterday was saying, the purpose of these meetings is to allow the United States to underscore that Iran is being uncooperative by refusing to give up their nuclear weapons, which they can't because they don't have them. It's just the same thing we went through with Iraq. We've got Secretary of State Hillary Clinton out there saying that Iran is running out of time to prove they do not have any evil intent. Well, this is a return to the Napoleonic Code, where we can make all the accusations about every other country on earth, and they have to prove a negative. If you are a student of logic and philosophy, you understand it is ultimately impossible to prove a negative. You know, it's like me going to my neighbor and say, prove that you don't have lustful designs on my wife. There's no way you can ever actually prove that. So do I have the right to say, well, I'm convinced that you have lustful designs on my wife, and therefore I am going to shoot you with a rather large bullet? No, of course I don't have the right to do that. I'd be hauled off to jail. And yet this is exactly the kind of morality and logic Hillary Clinton is using to justify a war on Iran. Iran can't prove they don't hold ill intent toward the United States, no matter what kind of jerks the government is. So we're justified in attacking them. And, of course, ahead of Ahmadinejad coming to the United States, they're cranking up once again all the negative propaganda about him they can. They are bringing back the fact that Ahmadinejad doubts the Orthodox Holocaust story. A little report there saying Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said the Holocaust is a myth, and so forth and so on. Okay, little question here. I'm going to give you the answers first and ask you the question. One, the United States. Two, Israel. Three, Iran. The question is, choose the one country that did not lie to us all about Iraq's nuclear weapons. Little pop quiz for you there. If you get it right, you get a gold star. Now, moving on down here, we've had all of this propaganda stuff here. They're trying to sell you a new war in Iran. Our government needs one. They're convinced that a new major war against Iran, possibly Russia, is going to convince Americans to forget all about the botched up economy. We're going to forget all about massive vote fraud. We're going to forget about all the lies and dirty tricks this government uses to keep us their slaves. And we will start saluting the flag with a very snappy salute and gladly shovel our money into the government's furnaces and send our children off to die in the middle of a desert on the far side of the planet if they just wave a bad guy at us. Our government misses the good old days of the Cold War where they just had to wave godless commies at us all. And we would shut off the rational part of our brain and just say, yes, save us from the godless commies. Here's my money. Here's my child. Please, just save me from the godless commies. And they're trying to bring that back. And it's not going to work. They don't get it. They don't get it at all. It is a vastly different world because of the Internet, because of the alternative media. And even if they succeed in shutting down the internet at this point, which I don't think they will, but even if they were to shut it off, do you think the people of the world would just magically transform back to the naive, trusting, believing masses they were half a century ago? I don't think so. We are a different people. We have the experience and wisdom that governments lie to their people to trick them into going along with the government's agenda. We have the understanding and wisdom that the government of the United States is no better than any other government we've seen of any other country, whether it's Pol Pot in Cambodia, Stalin in Russia, Batista in Cuba, or Hitler in Germany. I mean, they're using the same playbook. Hitler knocked down the twin radio towers in Gliwice to launch a war against Poland. Bush knocked down the twin towers in New York to launch a war against Afghanistan. It's the same game all over again, only we know it. Do you want to know why the war in Iraq was so historically important? It was the first time in the history of human civilization that the lies used to start a war were exposed to the general public while that war was still in progress. That had never happened before. Usually we find out that the lies that started a war are exposed long after the war is over and nothing can be done. We didn't find out about the lies about Pearl Harbor until 1994. The same thing with the torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin. We didn't find out that was a hoax until Vietnam was long gone and over and nothing could be done. We know, even as our children are dying in Iraq today, this very moment, this second, some young American is having parts of their body blown off. We know that they're there because of a lie about nuclear weapons. And we know, before we even fire a shot into Iran, we know that all the claims being made by the government are lies. Our government is continuing to act as if they are convinced. They can make us believe. If they just spend enough money on TV, if they just co-opt enough of the corporate media's talking heads to assure you that Iran is a threat, that somehow magically we will transform into this putty-like substance of a population that will simply go along with killing who we are told to kill, when we're told to kill them, where we're told to kill them, in order to make corporations rich, government more powerful, and to ease Israel's national paranoia about everybody living around them on the planet. But I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the resistance to the war is starting to build. I'm convinced that far more than healthcare was behind these protests and town hall meetings. I think the anger that fuels it is the awareness we have been lied to. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right to the phones. Brother Solomon from Brazil, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Sarabá, meu querido hermano Rivero. Good morning to you and to your distinguished audience. And I'm angry. Not only because of the issues that I repeat and repeat. Now I am angry because your computer is not working properly. Yeah.
Well,
but listen, the other day I was at one of the internet cafes that I usually frequent, and we start to get your bikini pictures. Yeah, instead of sending the bikini picture to your wife, your computer is sending to us. So please contact nationalwebgroup.com. Because between you and I, bikini's not for you, man. I guess shorts would be better.
Okay, well, we'll definitely look into that. And anything else going on for you today?
I have four short things to share with you and contribute to your program. And if you allow me, I will spit them out in 3 minutes. First, last week, 2 million march. If people are honest, they need to multiply that for the natural ratio. The problem will be 80-1. It means 160 million, that is 52 of our population, had wanted to be there. Beside Washington is Obama's lands. So where were the black troops in a black city? Second, if exposing the crimes of the government is racism, then in this case it's semi-racism. Which one? One, black or white?
Okay, now let me explain the thing about the black population. Right now, you have a huge part of the black population who supported Obama when he was running for office. They're becoming very disenchanted, but they're falling for this hoax that opposition to Obama is racist. And if you're black and he's black, you know, you're trying to say, oh, well, we're all black together, therefore we can't speak out against him. And that has been a huge part of his power base. But that's starting to fall apart. There were black people in that march in Washington, D.C. The media disemphasized them because they're trying to sell this idea that this is all rooted in racism. So they're not showing the black people who were in that protest march.
Right,
if you look at the wide view pictures, you will see there are black people in that crowd. They're just not being shown close up by the media because the media is trying to sell this idea that this opposition to Obama is nothing but racism, and therefore the rest of America should not pay any attention to it.
Right, but what I was saying is that if there are so many blacks that are against these 2 million march, they should have showed up on the same march and saying we are against you, we're pro-Obama, but they were not there. So
I see what you're saying. Now, you're absolutely correct.
Probably they were really supporting the march.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jewish tradition, a baby is not Jewish if it's not coming from a Jewish mother. In this case, we can really even say the same. The guy is not black because he's not coming from a black mother. That's a white mother. So we can even consider Obama a white guy. I don't want to consider him white or black.
I don't want to consider any of this issue white or black. That's the whole point of the first part of my show, is don't get suckered into thinking white-black divisiveness. Think we, the people, against an abusive government. That is, to paraphrase Obama, the defining struggle of our generation.
Well,
and that's the problem.
That is just to answer Gaga Carter in his comments about this is racism. Well, what kind of racism it is? Is white or black or which one? It should be none.
They don't.
I agree with you fully.
Yeah.
I don't think my dear brother Rivero that my fellow Americans let the next criminal aggression to Iran happen. I think they want it happen. And I'm sorry for this comment if people get offended, but Americans had 9 months to disassemble the corporate, oligarchic, military dictatorship. But America decided to support the only glue in this government, that are the militaries, and prove with this attitude that 100 years of behavioral modification executed by this corporate, oligarchic, military dictatorship, they see as laboratory rats, brother, in this experiment. And it seems that it's impossible to break free from that conditioning. They are conditioning to support the war. And if you put the four elements in this corporate oligarchy military dictatorship, which one would you remove that will really give you some chance of succeeding in recovering freedom? To me, it would be the military, because meanwhile the militaries are there, the dictatorship will be forever, and we will still be the experiment of this government. We are an experiment, Brother Rivero.
Well, all nations are an experiment, and hopefully out of experiments something better will result, which is why I'm opposed to globalism. Anyway, we're going to let you go here.
Thank you very much, brother, for your time and for your patience. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for the phone call. I am not sure that the military, at least the rank and file, are necessarily the problem. Most military people I know are pretty strict constitutionalists. And I think one of the reasons that the U.S. government is now talking about revoking gun ownership rights for returning veterans from the wars who show any signs of post-traumatic stress syndrome is they understand these are the people who are trained and ready to fight if a civil war breaks out in this country. And obviously, after what they have seen in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the government is obviously concerned that the vast majority of returning veterans are not going to be supporting the government if there is a social upheaval in this country. And this is why they're trying to selectively disarm them. So this is a government clearly afraid of its own military. I think, by and large, if we reach that crisis point, I think the reason the U.S. government is bringing in all these foreign troops and having all of these exercises across the country, they don't trust the American military to stand with the dictatorship in the event of a confrontation. I think that's what's going on. Now, as we wrap up hour number one, I want to return back to this topic about the Iranian war. Why are we going into Iran? They don't really represent a threat to the United States, even if they had a nuclear weapon. They're not going to use it against the United States, and the reason is very simple. Ahmadinejad, as is the case with every other national leader in history, has got an ego the size of his country. All world leaders do what they do, dreaming at night about future generations who will admire their face on the stamps and the coinage and the statues. And you don't get those future generations admiring your face on the coinage and stamps and statues if you destroy your own country. So Ahmadinejad is not going to do anything that will justify the United States flattening the place. The United States has thousands of warheads and thousands of missiles and submarines and bombers and all the rest and cruise missiles. And the United States is the only government psychotic enough to have actually used nuclear weapons of mass destruction on the civilians of another country. It's a demonstrated behavior trait. So even if Ahmadinejad had a nuclear weapon, he is not a threat to the United States. My parents' generation spent $5 trillion, and that was back when a trillion was really a lot of money, to create a nuclear deterrent. And it was sold to us on this idea that if we had all these bombs and rockets and submarines and cruise missiles and everything, that no other country would dare attack us. So one of two things has to apply. Either that deterrent works, and it doesn't matter if Ahmadinejad has a bomb, or that deterrent was a complete and total waste of money, and I want a refund, and so should you. You can't have it both ways. So Ahmadinejad, even if he had a bomb, is not a threat to the United States, and he doesn't have a bomb. It's a moot point. Why are we pushing so hard to go into Iran? Because Israel wants it. Go and search through the newspapers and articles. We've got collections of article links at whatreallyhappened.com. Israel is behind the push for war in Iraq. Israel's behind the push for war in Iran. And it doesn't matter how many countries we destroy, there's always going to be another enemy to Israel that we have to go in and stomp all over. Look at our members of Congress who receive so much money from AIPAC, an organization already, even Steve Rosen is now admitting that AIPAC spies on America for Israel, and still they'll do nothing about it. Our congressmen and even our presidential candidates get so much money from AIPAC, and here's what it comes down to in a nutshell. Our government has made the conscious decision to sell your children into death and dismemberment in the service of a foreign country. Our government, our Congress, our president are treating your children in uniform as property to be rented out, to be sold in exchange for campaign donations. This is slavery. We are a slave country when our children can be rented and sold to Israel to go kill Israel's enemies. So what is the price tag on the life of your child? Get out a tag, put a price on that child, and say, this is what I'm willing to sell his life for. Because that is what our government is doing to your kids right now. We'll be back after the news and these words from our sponsors. This is the What Really Happened Radio Show, and I'm your host, Michael Rivero.
Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show here. And before we get into the rest of the stuff I wanted to talk about, I have a comment about that story we just heard about the so-called health care reform. There really is no reform. What they're going to do is make sure that every American has health care coverage by ordering you to go out and buy health care coverage. You know, the wonderful little solution here. And you know something, if you think about it, whether you think you should have health insurance or not, and I think you should, you know, it's just the companies are very abusive about it. But when the government orders you to go out and buy stuff, it's the same thing as another tax. When the government orders you to buy automobile insurance, it's a tax. You're being ordered to give your money to some facility of society that hopefully will provide a service back to you. But, of course, once it's a government-mandated service, the quality of service goes down and costs go up. That has been the historical precedent. It's going to be the same thing with the health insurance. What we wanted was a health system like you have in Canada or France or Norway, where the government that takes half of everything you ever make turns around and spends it back on taking care of you, the taxpayer. That's what they have in Canada and France and Norway. They paid pretty much the same taxes that we do here, but instead of spending the money on their financial, you know, elite or Israel or endless war around the globe, these governments, civilized governments, turn around and they spend the money on health care for their people and free education and social services and better roads. I mean, finally, I just as a little side here, it came out 2 weeks ago that Hawaii has the worst roads in the United States right now. All of a sudden, there's a flurry of activity. They're down at the bottom of the hill, filling in the potholes and everything like that. So I guess we got a little bit of embarrassment out of that situation. But seriously, what we wanted for health care from Obama was to stop spending money on war and spend it on us. Instead, Obama is saying, we're still going to take half of everything you ever make, and we're going to spend it on Israel and Wall Street and war. And we're going to order you to spend more of your own money on health care insurance. Well, that's the deal we've got now. That's not an improvement. And it's not a reform. So I wanted to comment on that because there's another story we ran this morning on whatreallyhappened.com where health insurance companies already assured of mandated customers are already beginning to pull back on the services and benefits that they're willing to pay for. They're starting to say that C-sections are a pre-existing condition not covered by health insurance because having a baby is a choice. It's not like you have a disease. You decided to have a baby. Therefore, the health insurance doesn't have to cover it if you have a C-section. And part of the problem is that C-sections originally started out as an emergency measure to save the life of the baby and the mother in complications. Now they're just being done so the doctors can get out to the tee times, you know, out to the golf course in time for their tee off. And so the insurance companies are saying, well, we don't have to pay for that. That was an option. You know, we don't have to cover that. In some health insurance companies, they're starting to say that domestic abuse is no longer covered because it's not a disease or an accident. I mean, they're looking for reasons to deny coverage even as the rates are going to go up because we're all going to be forced to buy the insurance. This is not health care reform. This is looting the American people for the benefit of corporations. All right, we're going to take a phone call here real quick. Mark in Georgia. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Mark there?
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing fine. Aloha. What's on your mind today?
Mike, in my opinion, civil rights and civil liberties, they go hand in hand. Civil rights was a good victory. But one thing, especially in the African-American community, we need to come and put on civil liberties now. Because civil liberties don't just affect one state or one race of people. It affects everybody.
Yes,
that's
I would agree with that.
To see. We're beginning to see that on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I think we all agree we want to pull together into one people to deal with our problems, and it's the government and the media that is trying to split us up and trick us into glaring at each other now and saying, oh, you're the problem over there because you've got a different skin color and you wear your plaids wrong and you're wearing wool with argyle and all the rest of this other stuff. And it's just a way of divide and conquer, which is how our government keeps all of us, whites and blacks, their slaves.
Right, and I'm a student of history, so one thing that I did notice when I had saw the election of Barack Obama was that you wasn't going to get the hope that he was going to give you. And the reason why is because it always has been about divide and conquer. Now, if you look real carefully at the way the media talked to spend it in the beginning, they said, is America ready for a black president? They had all type of shows, being black in America and everything. Everything to gear up the people. So we're going to play by the card in which they dealt to us. It was the Caucasians that gave Barack Obama the opportunity to become president. Because blacks, from the numbers that they say, don't represent 12% of the population. So, I mean, we're a very small minority. But one of the problems that we have, especially African Americans, especially when it boils down to the workplace and other areas, they always say that, okay, well, it's a myth. But at the same time, among some ignorant people, it's true. They say that we're not smart enough to be leaders and we don't have the know-how to be able to lead. Well,
Well, we've been hearing
people, they'll believe that the way this man running the country.
we've been hearing that crap. I mean, all the way back to World War II. If you look at the Tuskegee Airmen, I mean, we had that senator, I can't remember his name, but he stood up in Congress and claimed to have a scientific report that blacks were incapable of learning how to handle aircraft, which of course the airmen absolutely proved was wrong. And we hear this stuff all the time. And again, it is simply a way of keeping the American people broken up into little, tiny, easily manageable, easily manipulatable groups. And they're trying to do it again. And this time I am hoping. In fact, I'm rather confident that the American people are going to understand what a dirty trick it really is, and they're not going to fall for it this time. And it's a hard sell. We're seeing it all over the media. Ooh, black this and white this and black this and white this. They're trying to drive a wedge in between us all to keep us fighting each other and not dealing with a government that's completely out of control. Mark, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go here.
Thanks.
But thank you for the phone call, and please call in again. Now, I want to take a little trip over here to 9/11, because as you know, this last week, Charlie Sheen got up there and basically hurled the defy at Barack Obama to answer 20 questions regarding 9/11. Now, there are far more questions than just 20, but he picked 20 questions, 19 of which I agree with, and just put it out there. And the response from the corporate media and the government has been insane. And there was this article at the Kansas City Tribune written by this L. Malik that was a screed on Charlie Sheen. And the good news about it, it's linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com. But if you go and check out the article and then you look at all the comments down below, the reaction to her article has just been phenomenal in that it is universally condemnatory of the way she treated Charlie Sheen. If for no other reason, then Charlie Sheen has a right under the First Amendment to ask any question he wants of any political figure. That's what the First Amendment is for. And I understand a lot of people are emailing the editor of the Tribune saying that this woman should be sacked. Hasn't happened yet. They haven't taken down the article. But it is a very strong reaction. And the reason is, whether you agree with Charlie Sheen or not, the fact that he has put his name on the question of 9/11 has made it acceptable to talk about in polite company. Now, possibly as a result of this, when Homeland Security Chief Chertoff was on C-SPAN yesterday, he got pounded by caller after caller after caller about 9/11. And they didn't know how to deal with it because they couldn't find any callers who wanted to talk about anything else. And they're just thrashing around trying to deal with this flood of phone calls. And by the way, congratulations and applause to everybody who called in, because now's the time to keep getting in their face. They're getting the message. They've lost this one. So Chertoff comes out with this stupid, lame, desperate, pathetic attempt to link 9/11 denial with Holocaust denial. Ooh, you don't want to be thought of as a Holocaust denier, so you'd better not deny 9/11. I think this is going to blow up in his face. This is called hoisting with your own petard, because you've got about 70 to 80% of the world's population, depending upon whose polling figures you're using, are convinced that the U.S. government lied about 9/11, that it was a war-starting hoax. And if you start linking 9/11 to the Holocaust, people are going to start looking at all the little things about the Holocaust myth that don't make sense. And Chertoff may have actually done more damage than good by attempting to link the two. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the government and media reaction to the fact that the general public has pretty much decided that whatever the official story about 9/11 is supposed to be, that it is in all probability another war-creating lie on the same level as Iraq and Iran's nuclear bombs. It's all a hoax to create and justify wars. There are so many things wrong with the official story of 9/11. You've got the BBC reporter announcing the collapse of World Trade Center 7 with the building still standing behind her. Somebody obviously got off the timeline on that one. You've got the thermite found in the ruins debris of World Trade Center 7. You've got this the World Trade Towers. You've got the way World Trade Center 7 simply collapsed into its own footprint. Everybody who's a demolitions expert who looks at that video says that's a controlled demolition. There is no way a fire brought the building down that way. It is a controlled demolition. Then we have the way that Bush sat in the classroom in Sarasota, Florida, reading about goats with the Secret Service, just standing there and letting them sit there, where supposedly we're under this terrorist attack by crashing airplanes, and there's an airport only 4 miles away. And if you look at the aerial photo of Sarasota, you will see that that runway points almost directly at the school. If a Muslim terrorist, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, had grabbed an airplane at the Sarasota airport, there would have been maybe 2 minutes from takeoff to crashing into the school. And it's like it's not likely they would have even had a warning in sufficient time. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things wrong with the official story. And most people simply don't believe it anymore. And the government and the corporate media are trying to keep the official legend. Now they're talking about diverting even more of our scarce and overstressed educational resources to 9/11 education in the classroom, to go along with Holocaust education in the classroom and global warming education in the classroom. We don't have time and money to teach our kids skills that will actually get them jobs. But by golly, we're going to make sure that they understand the official lies they're supposed to believe. Right now, somebody just did a survey. Only about one quarter of our school kids understand the Constitution is supposed to be the supreme law of the land and what the Bill of Rights is supposed to be about. We're not even teaching kids the fundamental laws of the nation. But we're going to fill their heads full of carbon dioxide is bad and you must pay a global warming tax. And the Recording Industry Association of America's approved curriculum on why stealing copies of files is a bad thing. And yes, it is, but it's a hard sell when you've got the government stealing other people's countries as an example. We're indoctrinating our kids. We're not educating them. And that is why our economy is unable to compete with the rest of the world. We're too busy brainwashing our kids and teaching them how not to think, so they can't compete in a thinking world. And for Chertoff to come off with this stupid, lame attempt to link 9/11 denial with Holocaust denial, I think it's going to backfire. It's going to backfire because most people of the world are aware that 9/11 was a hoax. They're aware that Saddam's nukes were a hoax. They're aware that Iran's nukes are a hoax. And they're aware that there are aspects of the Holocaust story that have not survived the test of time and technology. The bars of soap were not made from Jewish victims. They're a low-fat soap. DNA tests show that what little fat is in them came from pigs, which is embarrassing to all those people who had funerals for them. The lampshade story, turns out it's goat skin, not human skin. The mythical electric machine that totally vaporized its victims never existed. Camp Walczak that was in Rudolf Hess's confession at Nuremberg never existed. Ground-penetrating radar at Treblinka confirms there are no mass graves there. And if you ever get to Auschwitz, and yes, it's worth showing up there as long as you understand it is designed to sell a particular point of view. But if you talk to the curator at the Auschwitz Museum, he will admit, if you ask him a direct question, the big crematorium they are showing people was actually built after the war by the Russians to deal with the typhus epidemics that were killing everybody in Germany. Prisoners, camp guards, officers, military civilians, everybody was falling victim to the typhus epidemics. And that's why they had the big crematoriums to deal with the corpses, which were still highly infectious. So for Chertoff to link 9/11 denial to Holocaust denial, I think that's a bad move on his part. Because people are going to say, well, I know we were lied to about Iraq's nukes and 9/11 and the Gulf of Tonkin and all the rest of it. Were we lied to about the Holocaust? Yeah, Israel had a motive. They used the myth of the Holocaust to justify stealing Palestine from the Palestinians. I mean, just think about it real briefly. Then we're going to move on here to Israel's nuclear arsenal. At the end of World War II, the Allied nations, including the United States, had sacrificed much blood and much treasure on the idea that Hitler did not have the right, that Germany did not have the right to march into other people's countries and steal them for their own use, whether it was Poland or Norway or France or Austria or any of these other places. That was the moral foundation of World War II. Germany couldn't do that. Then, all of a sudden, you have Israel asking the rest of the world for permission to do exactly that to Palestine, to go into Palestine and steal it from the Palestinian people for Israel's use. And they needed a propaganda tool so powerful that the rest of the world would be convinced that what was bad for Germany to do to Europe was acceptable for Israel to do to Palestine. And that was when the history of World War II started getting a little bit exaggerated. To justify allowing Israel to do to Palestine what we had all agreed Hitler should not do to Poland and France and Norway and Austria, etc., 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 etc. That's the motive for the whole thing here. Now, getting back to Israel. As you know, Israel's out there screaming, Iraq's nukes, Iran's nukes, sanction, 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 invade, 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 kill, 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 kill. That's what you Americans are for. Go kill our enemies for us. Now, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution calling on Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and to allow inspection of its nuclear sites. Israel, of course, has immediately refused. We all know why. And this is another situation where I think this is going to blow up in Israel's face, because they're already reeling from the United Nations report of war crimes in Gaza. And Netanyahu is already literally going around threatening the rest of the world's leaders that if they accept the Goldstone report and do anything with it, that Israel is going to start leaking whatever blackmail information they have on the rest of the world's leaders and take them all down with them. You know, it's politics by thuggery, foreign relations by thuggery, and blackmail and everything. So anyway, the United Nations has called on Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and allow inspections. The IAEA has also joined the chorus of voices for Israel to allow nuclear inspection and to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. It is illegal under United States law to send Israel any kind of foreign aid, financial or military, while they have nuclear weapons technology that is not under IAEA safeguards. And while Israel is not a signatory to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, this is why when you have people like Helen Thomas ask Barack Obama a direct question, who has nuclear weapons in the Middle East, Obama cannot answer. Because the instant the U.S. government admits that it knows Israel has nuclear weapons, all of that money that has been sent to Israel becomes a criminal misappropriation of your tax dollars. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here today. And we're talking about Israel's nuclear weapons. We know they're there. We've known about it since Mordecai Vanunu. Israel keeps dropping hints that they've got them, but maintains an official policy of ambiguity. The reason they do that is very simple. Under the Symington Amendment for the U.S. Foreign Appropriations Act, it is illegal for the United States government to send your tax dollars to any nation with nuclear weapons technology that is not a signer of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and which does not allow inspections. This is why on his very first press conference, when Helen Thomas asked Barack Obama what countries in the Middle East have nuclear weapons right now, Obama did his little tap dancing thing, talked about we will not allow proliferation and escalation, blah, 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 and never actually answered the question. Helen Thomas has since been moved to the back of the room. And the reason is very simple. The instant the U.S. government officially acknowledges Israel's nuclear arsenal, and by the way, U.S. Army manuals already do, but the instant the U.S. government acknowledges that Israel is a nuclear power, then all of that tax money that has been given to Israel since the passage of the Symington Amendment becomes a criminal misappropriation of your tax money, and we are all owed refunds. The government has been knowingly violating the law to send money to Israel. They're breaking the law to loot you for Israel's benefit. You think about that one for a while. Now, Iran, which the media is trying to convince you is a bad place deserving of destruction, is a signer of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which gives them the right to build a nuclear power station and to make the fuel rods for it. More than that, the NNPT obligates the United States to help them do it. We're supposed to be in there with the cement mixers, pouring foundations, laying pipe, and soldering the wiring together. And if we were actually doing that, if we were complying with our treaty obligations, we would know it's just a power station. Because if you're in there with the construction crew, it's impossible to hide a clandestine weapons lab from you. It's just impossible. But, of course, the issue about clandestine weapons isn't really what's going on here. Israel says, you must go kill Iran for us. And our government says, yes, we will go kill Iran for you. And your kids get blown up into little bloody bits again. So we have the United Nations passing a resolution asking Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and submit to inspections. We have the IAEA saying exactly the same thing. Iran has stepped up to the table. They're willing to pay for it all. They are willing to fund fact-finding missions and inspection travel to Israel for IAEA inspectors to inspect Israel's nuclear facilities. By the way, gang, when you get there, look behind that fake wall where they hid the elevators going down to the basement labs. Don't fall for that one a second time. Israel, of course, is rejecting all of this. They're saying that this move is actually just singling them out. Yeah. They're the only country in the Middle East that actually has nuclear weapons. But I think the ultimate hypocrisy here is that we have the United States and Israel screaming for sanctions and sanctions against Iran, just as they did against Iraq. And we found out in Iraq's case, there was no reason for the sanctions. Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction. It was all a lie. It was all a hoax. Now they're trying the same stunt with Iran and wondering why we loyal Americans aren't willing to give them the benefit of the doubt one more time. And we're not, with good reason. Fool me once, so forth and so on. So I think the time has come. Since Israel is always at the forefront of screaming for sanctions against countries that don't actually have nuclear weapons, that it's time for sanctions against the one country in the Middle East that actually does. And it's beginning to start already. UK trade unions are boycotting Israeli goods. We know there are boycotts against Israel arising out of the war crimes of Cass Lead. And I think, while it may not be officially declared, we're starting to see boycotts of American products and services around the world. Not that we have all that much to sell, but take a look at what's happening to our economy. Now they're talking about trade war with China. As long as our government continues to be the willing and obedient slave of the government of Israel, then we will be as reviled a pariah nation as Israel is itself. We're their shadow. We're their enabler. Ever see the movie Beyond Thunderdome, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? And there was this very interesting character called Master Blaster, where there was this very smart, small person who perpetually lived on the shoulders of this big, hulky giant who didn't have much in the way of smarts. And the two functioned as a unit. That is a perfect metaphor for Israel in the United States. Israel's this little tiny country that has control over the big, hulking American military machine and government. And they're functioning as a unit to try and control the world around them. And it's beginning to kind of fall apart because I think the rest of the world is fed up with all this nonsense that we're getting from Israel. Meanwhile, I want to share this little story, going off on a tangent. If you saw in the American newspapers an article in which white people were going around patrolling singles bars and whatnot for the express purpose of preventing white girls from talking with black men, would you not agree that this is a highly racist and very inappropriate course of action to be occurring in the United States of America? Of course you would. Of course you would. If there was such a policy here in Hawaii back in the 60s, we wouldn't have our present president, would we? But amazingly enough, in Israel, there are organized groups that are going around to make sure that Jewish girls are not talking and associating with and dating, let alone marrying, Arab men. And yet Israel insists this is a perfectly appropriate course of action to maintain the purity of the master race, or whatever it is their justification is over there. But, and I put this story on my website, deliberately changing the headline to say whites are cruising the bars to prevent white girls from dating black men, intending to provoke a reaction saying, how can you post such racist crud? Which, of course, is the reaction I wanted. Because once you read the actual article and you say that this is Jewish people going around trying to prevent Jewish women from dating Arab men, you have to understand it's just as racist when they're doing it. Israel wants to pretend that it isn't, but it is. It's still racist-based activity. And it is something that we need to understand about the national character of Israel. We are being forced to support financially a racist apartheid regime. Even the South Africans, who are experts on apartheid, they're saying Israel is apartheid. Walls, gates, special passes. Oh, you're not allowed to date these people. You're not allowed to marry these people. We've got to keep them separate. We're being forced to pay for all that. Four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program is what Israel has cost the American taxpayers. And we're still waiting for that great leap for mankind to come out of all this money that we're spending. So far, it's not looking very good here. Now, as you know, there was this Goldstone report that came out of the United Nations, where they went in and they investigated what had been going on during Operation Cast Lead. And for those of you who need a little brush up on it, last November 4th, when we, the American people, were being distracted by our elections, Israel broke the six-month ceasefire with Hamas. They just invaded Gaza. They did some bombing. They killed six Hamas officials. The next day, Hamas said, well, I guess the ceasefire must be over. And Israel said, aha, Hamas says the ceasefire is over. Boom. Went in, tanks, bullets, guns, white phosphorus, horrific cruelty and oppression on all the people. Now, the United Nations investigated. Israel tried to block the investigation every way they could. When the Goldstone report finally came out, the servile, obedient media headlined all the reports about the Goldstone report as UN reports finds both sides committed war crimes. Basically trying to say, well, they're both wrong and they're both evil. If you actually read the report, it was overwhelmingly Israel's war crimes against the people of Gaza. So that cover-up didn't work very well. Now Netanyahu is literally threatening world leaders to reject the Gaza war crimes report, or he's going to start releasing bad information about all of them. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Last segment of the show here today. Now, over the last couple of days, there's been a great deal of talk about the fact that Barack Obama has basically canceled plans to install a missile defense shield in Europe. A lot of people were scratching their head. This was supposed to be in response to the Iranian threat, and yet it seemed more intended to deter perhaps eventual hostilities with Russia. Russia certainly saw it that way. This last week, Obama just very quietly announced that that was being shut down. Theories are flying back and forth over what happened. There's one theory is that Russia was able to blackmail the United States into getting the missiles out of there. Another is that Obama pulled the missiles out of there in exchange for Russia breaking their treaty obligations to Iran in the event of an upcoming invasion. I'm not sure about that one, because this all happened after Netanyahu came back from Russia and didn't get what he wanted. Because then the U.S. turned around and said, Russia's our biggest challenge to American interests and blah, 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 blah. Trying to bring back the Cold War. But regardless, the missiles are coming out. Not that they were all that good. I mean, the record of testing of this whole system, has been failure after failure after failure, and that's with the incoming test target having a radio beacon in it, which is something that an actual enemy is not going to oblige us with. Plus, the latest generation of Russian nuclear MIRV reentry vehicles are able to actually maneuver, which destroys any intercept solution based on a predictable ballistic track. So this thing was obsolete from day one. But what we're hearing now is that Obama is relocating this missile shield technology to Israel and Azerbaijan, basically to confront Iran, who we presume at this point is still using the old-fashioned ballistic-type missiles. And it's just another indicator of the U.S. is going to invade Iran. Doesn't matter if they've got a moral right or even a legal right to do it. Israel says invade Iran. And so, you know, kiss your kids goodbye and kiss your money goodbye, because there is no sacrifice too great to make Israel happy. Because if Israel's unhappy, it's going to make a lot of our politicians very unhappy, because they'll cut off the money, and worse, they'll release the negatives. I mean, if you go back to the final report on the situation with Bill Clinton and the aftermath of his little fooling around with Monica Lewinsky in the White House. And it's in the record that Clinton was telling Monica that somebody had been tapping her phone at the Watergate and had caught their phone sex sessions on tape. And they were using it to blackmail the president to call off the hunt for Israel's top spy in the U.S. government, codenamed MEGA. So, you know, this is how the game gets played. We know that Israel's supporters, charities and foundations, will spend vast sums of money to give these free trips to American congressmen. They'll take them to Israel, and then they're in Israel for a week, and when they come back, boy, are they loyal to Israel, even ahead of the United States of America. I don't know, maybe they get them drunk, get them set up with a really cute girl or a really cute boy, if you remember that incident with the New Jersey governor. And from then on, they've got videotape of them or whatever, and they can be blackmailed. And if they can be blackmailed, they can be controlled. Our government may be so totally compromised that politicians understand they have to allow themselves to be compromised and blackmailable if they're going to rise above a certain level. People talk about the glass ceiling. Let's call it the blackmail ceiling. If you're not blackmailable, you can't be promoted above a certain level. It could be just that cynical and just that obvious. And so people line up for these trips to go to Israel and do whatever it is they're going to do that gets caught on videotape with a, you know, with a sheep or a duck or children or whatever it is, so that Israel knows they're trustworthy from that point on. And this may be the reason that Netanyahu is dropping such a dire, dark threat on the rest of the world's leaders, that unless they reject the United Nations report on war crimes committed by Israel against the Palestinians, that Israel, in turn, is going to start letting out damaging information about the rest of the world's leaders. Which, as far as I'm concerned, great. Let's get it all out there now. Let's get it all out there now. Let's get the dark secrets out there. Let the chips fall where they may. Because if our government is lying to us, and it is, and if our government can be blackmailed by a foreign power, and apparently that is also the case, then this government is of absolutely no use to we the people. We need a government that's taking care of us, not a foreign country. We need a government that we can trust to be truthful and accurate with us. We don't have that now. We need a government that knows how to balance a checkbook. We definitely have not had that for a long time. And we need a government that is going to at least strike a balance between the needs of the big bankers and the needs of we the people. And we don't have that either. So we're in a very, very tight situation here right now. I am still convinced that the ultimate fate of the United States government is that it's going to collapse the way the USSR did. There is a revolution underway. It's taking place here on the airwaves and on keyboards. The first side that starts actually shooting with real guns and bullets is going to lose in the court of world opinion. If the government starts shooting or starts using their pain guns or their LRADs or whatever, it will be seen as a modern-day equivalent of Amritsar or Kent State. And they can't afford that. So what they're probably going to try and do is get their undercover informants and agents provocateurs to try and make it look like we the people are starting the violence. Don't fall for that either. Don't fall for that either. This is a war that's won with information. And the truth is getting out there. They wouldn't be panicking and talking about 9/11 denial like it's a religious experience. They're losing the war for the minds of America. We have a country of free-range human beings who are stepping off the line, out of the box, and over the barbed wire. And that's a good thing. It's a very, very good thing here. Now, in their haste to try and crank up a world war, in the vain belief that it will inspire new loyalty among the American people, apparently we're kicking things up in Somalia. We had this little incursion by the U.S. into southern Somalia on Monday. A couple of days later, there was a retaliation. And now the U.S. is saying, aha, they're retaliating. We can go in there now in force. And they're going back into Somalia. I seem to recall an incident involving some Black Hawk helicopters over Mogadishu that didn't work out very well. And we're going right back into the same place. Why? Do they really have that much oil that makes it worthwhile to go in there? We're seeing more and more evidence that oil is not drippings from old dinosaurs, that in fact it is a continually renewing resource. Oil fields that were thought to be depleted are being reexamined and found to have new oil flowing up from below. Or maybe is it time to take all these trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that we're spending on killing people around the world and do a serious research program to develop the next energy source? I mean, we talk about the ages of mankind, the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, Steel Age. We've been in the Oil Age now for quite a long time. We've had a little flirtation with the Atomic Age. That's got some downside to it. We need to find the next thing. Whether it's cold fusion, which again is showing promise, or something that has yet to be discovered. If we had invested all of this money that we spent on war, on pure research, we would have alternative, effective, cost-efficient energy. We'd solve a lot of problems. We just have a political leadership that, because they are politicians and lawyers and accountants, they don't know how the world works. They couldn't build a road to save their own lives. That's how inept they are. And it's one thing about people with very limited awareness and education. They don't like smart people to be around them who can call them, especially a paranoid government like ours. They don't want to have anybody in Washington, D.C. who's got enough education and smarts to say, you know, the way you're approaching this project is really stupid and there's a better way to do it. And so as a result, there's literally a brain vacuum around the nation's capital. Forget about the best and the brightest. I'm very sure that in the issues of law and bookkeeping, these are some very smart people in Washington, D.C. But in terms of real-world smarts, they're very dumb. And they're very insecure. And that's why good solutions are banned in Washington, D.C. All right, that's it for our Saturday show. We're going to be back Monday, 5 p.m. Central, here on the Genesis Communication Network with whatever lunacy this government is going to come up with next. So until then, have a good weekend. Stay safe. Drive carefully. Eat lots of cinnamon. Hug your loved ones. And aloha, America.